This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Spanky very much.
What's a farce?
It's a three-step systematic attack on the entire national infrastructure. Okay, step one, take out all the transportation. Step two, financial base and telecoms. Step three, get rid of all the utilities, gas, water, electric, nuclear, pretty much anything that's run by computers, which today is almost everything. So that's why they call it a fire sale, because everything must go.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
Wait a motherfucking minute. Did I just... Let me try that shit again. Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, where if it ain't broke, it ain't news. I'm your host, The Stimulator, and it looks like it's the end of the Gaddafi.
Are you going to talk about England? When are you going to talk about England?
Oh, no, not this shit again. Okay, Joey, roll the riot porn.
Wait.
Everyone was just on a riot, just going mad, like, chucking things, chucking bottles. Like, it's the government's fault.
It's not even a riot, it's showing the police we can do what we want.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, showing the police we can do what we want, and now we have.
Yep. After the bar was raised by the knock-blocking band Shitty, the Brits decided to outdo their Canadian counterparts by unleashing a four-day insurrection in the land of fish and chips and Guy Ritchie flicks.
London.
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 London?
Yes, London. You know, fish, chips, cup of tea, bad food, worse weather, merry fucking poppins, London.
Many claim that the Brits raged because the pigs murdered Matt Dugan, an alleged drug dealer and gang member. But others say that, like in Vancouver, this was just a spark, and that young peeps are fucking pissed about their current situation, and smashing shit up is simply a way for the disempowered youth to express their motherfucking anger.
I don't call it rioting, I call it an insurrection of the masses of the people. It is happening in Syria, it is happening in Clapham, it's happening in Liverpool, it's happening in Port of Spain, Trinidad, and that is the nature of the historical moment.
Yep, insurrections are a daily occurrence these days, with peeps realizing their motherfucking power all over the place. Like the brave freedom fighters in Syria who have been murdered by the thousands since they started defying Bashar al-Assad back in March. But the resolve of the Syrian people might be stronger than ever, as the reality of toppled regimes through popular uprisings in the region provide tangible motivators to keep the motherfucking thing going. Even though information is hard to come by, amateur videos spread through social media provide evidence that the Syrian insurrection is not slowing down. And speaking of social media, the governments of the first world are totally down with brown peeps using FaceTwat to kick out dictators they don't like, but are not really down when the same tools are used back at home. In the UK, Grimes Finkster David Cameron suggested blocking social media sites during motherfucking insurrections.
Everyone watching these horrific actions will be struck by how they were organized via social media. Free flow of information can be used for good, but it can also be used for ill. So we are working with the police, the intelligence services, and industry to look at whether it would be right to stop people communicating via these websites and services when we know they are plotting violence, disorder, and criminality.
And in the US, the Bay Area Transit Authority, or BART, actually shut down mobile phone repeaters in its tunnels to disrupt troublemakers from protesting the recent murder of Charles Hill by BART police. This blatant act of fascism prompted the righteous cyber gigs of Anonymous to wreak havoc on BART's websites.
Today, we've seen America come alive. In the Bay Area, we've seen people gagged, and once more, Anonymous will attempt to show those engaging in censorship what it feels like to be silenced.
This is just the latest cyber attack on those who seek to clamp down on the motherfucking resistance. A few weeks ago, AntiSec released a buttload of data stolen from pig agencies from around the United States, in retaliation for the arrests of hackers charged in various anonymous actions. This wave of hacker attacks is the most exciting shit since the Arab Spring, and many are speculating how groups like Anonymous are going to up the ante. Some members of Anonymous say they plan to take out Facebook on the 5th of November, aka Guy Fawkes Day. But as awesome as that would be, I wonder why these hackers don't aim a little higher up the food chain, like the stock market. Feeling hopeless, I like to look at revolutionary movements that kick some serious motherfucking ass against massive odds and the heavy hand of the motherfucking FBI. One of these inspiring examples is the Black Panther Party. To give us the lowdown on the BPP, I spoke with anarchist Panther Ashanti Alston. Hey Ashanti, how the fuck are you?
I'm doing fine, and I'm happy to be on your show here. Me and my leader here, Mr. Biko. Say hello, Biko. Say power through the people. Power through the people, right on. Right?
So, what the fuck are the Black Panthers?
The Black Panther Party, which was started in 1966 here in the United States, was, I feel like it was probably the most revolutionary movement, not only amongst black people since our this period of hell we've been here in the United States for 400 years, but I think amongst a lot of groups in the history of the United States that have resisted, you know, this empire in different ways, whether it's around race or class or environmental issues, the Panther Party seems to have been able to inspire people from the very bottom of society to develop a kind of revolutionary consciousness that would really challenge the state, with the whole idea of overthrowing the state and building different variations of people's power.
People say the one thing that scared the government the most about the Panthers was not a bunch of armed black militants rolling down the street, but breakfast?
When you look at how we portrayed us ourselves, you take it back to the Marcus Garvey movement, there's a sort of pageantry in a way, a sort of performance in a way that becomes very attractive in terms of seeing black men and women uniformed, disciplined, but also very jazzy, spunky, you know, vibrant, with, you know, an unabashed sense of pride in carrying arms to defend themselves. That in itself is going to attract media attention. That in itself is going to attract the FBI. But when you really got down to it, from 1966, it's the beginnings to somewhere around 1969, the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover in particular, when he kind of summarized one of his reports on the Black Panther Party, characterizing us as public enemy number one, he in his own words said that it wasn't the guns, it was the breakfast programs. And by the breakfast programs, he meant the Black Panther Party survival programs and how we use them to organize people, to inspire people to sort of pull out of the system, to pull out of that mindset where we're locked into never feeling where we could win, we could come together. But a breakfast program that actually brings, you know, people together in the community to serve needs of their children, and also begin to extend that. If the government cannot do this, then we need to figure out how to serve our own needs. And that gave sort of concreteness to the whole idea of what freedom would look like, that we could control our own institutions, whether it was economics or whether it was the politics.
Ashanti, tell me about the type of shit that the FBI and the pigs put you through.
One was knowing that we were under constant surveillance. That's one. And I think the importance of that is that you know how vicious and murderous the state is, especially the police, right? And especially when you know the FBI is involved because of this mysterious cloak that the FBI carries. But even with that, we still continue to do what we did. I know my hometown, like me and the folks that organized our chapter, we would find that we were being followed by the police. We would get off the bus coming back from New York or Newark, and as soon as we're off the bus, here's a police car at the corner. Every time we come back, you know, we hear about Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton being arrested and on murder charges and stuff, and Huey gets convicted. Fred Hampton gets killed in his bedroom when the FBI and the police attack the Panther pad that has about a dozen Panthers living in it, you know, and just murder Fred Hampton, just outright, know exactly where his bedroom is, go right in there and kill him, and he can't move for some reason. You find out later that the person who infiltrated the group had poisoned his coffee or whatever he was drinking to put him asleep, you know. And we hear all of this, and that's a lot of tension. That's a lot of that's a lot to live under.
You were not an anarchist when you were part of the Black Panthers, but you identify as one now. What the fuck?
For me, it's the specific Panther experience, and I guess not only the Panther experience, but the coming out of the Black Nationalist movement, looking for the reasons why we were not able to continue to grow, sustain ourselves to the point where we could actually take hold of our lives, and whether it's through the institutions in our community or developing capacity to keep the police out, like what happened. And a lot of that for me was beginning to look at how we organized ourselves. The whole idea of leadership, you never question, of course there's got to be leaders, you know. But then the anarchism gave me ways to think about them things and even to pose the questions, do we need leadership? And if so, what kind? You know, and then the anarchism, being able to provide some examples of others who organize in non-traditional leadership ways, or even if we talk about leaderless, you know, movements and stuff. And that for me became more important than to have the Huey P. Newtons, to have the Malcolm X's. It's like collective leadership has got to be the way to go.
And that about us for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. Many thanks to the following slaves for extracting me from my beach-induced inertia and back into the milieu of insurrectionary agitational media creation. Colin, Samantha, James, Cyrus, Vandy, Lauren, Brandon, James, Brent, and Fred. It's Cody. I also want to let you motherfuckers know that I am planning my European tour now, so if you have venue ideas or want to organize a screening this fall, shoot me a fucking email, stimulator@submedia.tv. To comment on this show, or for hacking suggestions for Anonymous, just visit my fucking website, stimulator.tv. And remember, don't talk to the pigs.
Remember, kids, you can podcast high-quality video of this show at submedia.tv.